Why has the city of Milwaukee's teen birth rate dropped by 50% over the past 7 years? Well, we'll find out this hour, and we'll welcome your questions about preventing teen pregnancies. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, October 30th. We'll talk with a guest who is with the Milwaukee Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative, which has been honored nationally as a model for other cities. Milwaukee is a city that at one time had one of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the nation. So what makes this program work, and what is your reaction to the success of it? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest. Nicole Angrisano is the Vice President of Community Impact for United Way's funded health and human services programs for the greater Milwaukee area. She leads the United Way's community-wide teen pregnancy prevention initiative. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Before we go into the specifics of the program, can you give us an idea why Milwaukee decided such a program was needed?
Well, thank you so much for having me and giving me this forum to talk within. You know, this is not a new issue in Milwaukee. Milwaukee has been has faced significant challenges for many years, and is also a city filled with myriad assets. But the teen pregnancy issue has been around for decades, and I think it was a combination of factors of you know, becoming more aware of the data, but also getting to a point where the community was ready for change. You know, we know in public health and in the community that you can't simply barge in to a community and say, hey, here's what we're going to do and we're going to take this on. There has to be a readiness. There has to be a capacity for change. And Milwaukee finally had that in 2006. And so we got the ball rolling, and we're just couldn't be more pleased with the outcome.
Yeah, and let me play a clip. I think this is from one of the PSAs that that your program put together. This is Bevan Baker, the health commissioner for the city of Milwaukee, talking about the issue of teen pregnancy.
Historically, people thought that when a teen gets pregnant in our community, that's for that teen and her circle, maybe her family and some friends to deal with. But teen pregnancy impacts everyone. It impacts us as a community, as a city, as a region, as a state.
How does teen pregnancy impact everybody?
Well, first of all, you know, on an individual level, we know that it has significant impacts on the teens who are becoming parents too soon. Extend that out, and it has significant impacts on the children born to teens who are more likely to experience a host of problematic educational and social and financial outcomes. But beyond that, what we know about teen pregnancy is that it has a greater impact or an impact on the greater community. Most children born to teens are financially supported through taxpayer dollars, for example. Most children born to teens, children born to teens, when they have more significant social problematic outcomes, such as lower high school graduation rates, let's just take that for example, communities are impacted negatively when their high school graduation rate is low. We know this is a contributing factor to that. If you think more broadly about the Milwaukee business community, for example, they're trying to generate new business, invite people to come to Milwaukee, paint a picture of a city that is successful and thriving. Having a significantly high teen birth rate and the accompanying low high school graduation rate really doesn't generate a lot of interest in people coming to town and putting their roots down. So we know that the implications are much farther reaching than the teens that are involved in the actual pregnancy and birth.
So tell us what the main components are of the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative.
Well, there's so many components, and I think that's really the reason behind our success in terms of the numbers dropping so significantly. We have an all-hands-on-deck approach, an aggressive and incredibly bold media campaign. we have the buy-in and the support of the Milwaukee Public Schools, who have been extraordinary partners. We have the city at the table, the health commissioner, who you heard briefly, and also the mayor, who have been dynamic advocates for this. And at the core of this, we have the community-based organizations who are implementing evidence-based strategies every single day. But the primary reason behind this success are that young people in Milwaukee have been given the tools they need to make better decisions, to stay safer and healthier, and now this is what's bearing out. So it's really, we have a faith community initiative. We have a collaborative fund where partners from different foundations come together and fund strategies. So there's just so many strategies and tactics that have gone into this. In a way to reach people where they are and to impact. We know that there's no one-size-fits-all strategy, so we've worked very hard to make sure that we're able to meet people where they are and have diverse enough strategies that everyone can participate in the conversation.
Well, when you say you have a bold media campaign, tell us how bold it is.
Well, it's pretty bold. Mm-hmm. It's harder to share boldness on the radio than the visual impact of it. But what we know and is that young people are inundated, and communities in general are inundated with media messages. It's imperative that we catch people's attention. This is not about shock and awe. I know those terms get used a lot in terms of ad campaigns, but we're not shocking for shock value. We knew in Milwaukee that we had become complacent to this issue. We had no longer been concerned enough when babies were pushing other babies in baby carriages, right? We had become complacent. We stopped being committed. So we started a very aggressive ad campaign to make sure that, one, people understood this was a significant issue. You can't change behaviors until people are aware that there's a significant problem. And two, we did a very targeted campaign to the young people and the parents and all of the different key players in this initiative. So Serve Marketing, who has been an extraordinary partner, has designed radio ads, billboards. We've been on buses, full-size buses. We have been on gas pump toppers. We've been all over the place. And basically what we've said is, this is an issue, and you can do something about it, and all of us play a role.
James on Facebook writes, comprehensive sex ed in the schools is the key. How important is that?
Oh, it's critical. It's critical. And I said this earlier about what we wouldn't be where we were in terms of the numbers without the extraordinary participation of Milwaukee Public Schools. There are two, a very critical piece of this is that young people have to have access to factual, evidence-based information. We can't hide from them. We can't tell them not to talk about it. We have to give them tools to make better choices. And what Milwaukee Public Schools has done is implement a curriculum K through 12 to make sure that young people understand who they can talk to, what their body parts are called, how to stay safe, and then it gets progressively more advanced as the kids get age. It's age appropriate. It's aligned with national health standards. The second thing is that our number one investment from a financial standpoint is in a curriculum called Making Proud Choices, an evidence-based HIV and pregnancy prevention program that we have really blanketed the community with. This is a program that has been tested, that has been evaluated, and that is shown to have significant impact on the young people that take it, because, again, when you give young people information, they make better choices.
On the other hand, Mark on Facebook writes, I don't want schools teaching my kids morals and values. That's my job. Why are so many people wanting the government to raise their children? What's your response to that?
You know, I think it's a fair question. And what I would say to Mark and other listeners is that we want parents to be the primary educators of their kids. One thing we're doing right now, it's nearing the end, but every October is Let's Talk Month. This is a national campaign to make sure that parents have the tools they need to be their child's primary, first, and most significant health educator. We have toolkits. If you go on babycanwait.com, you can download these toolkits in English or Spanish, because it's not about parents having one talk with their kids and then being done. This is about a series of talks over many years, and it's about creating a relationship with your child so that they know that you're an askable adult. That being said, we believe that sex education is as important a subject as any other. And when we talk about, you know, I heard his concerns about teaching morals and values, and I think that's a valid question. These are really fact-based classes about anatomy, about safety, about relationships, helping kids understand what a healthy relationship looks like, making sure that they understand if they're being taken advantage of or treated badly by a partner. These are foundational skills that we believe are going to make them healthier, happier, and safer adults.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about the many components you have in the initiative, but let's talk some about these results that you announced last week. 50% drop in 7 years for the birth rate in Milwaukee. That surpassed your own expectations.
It did, and we just couldn't be more pleased. And again, the combination of inputs from community-based organizations, from community leaders, and what these young people have done in terms of making better decisions, we're just really proud.
Yeah. Now, is this? Can you break that down? Demographics? Is it? Is that the total teen population for that 50% drop?
That's 15 to 17-year-old teens. And that's a metric we use because it's aligned with how we collect data, and that's not to say at all that we're not concerned about the other ends of the teenage spectrum. But 15 to 17-year-olds tend to be sort of the sweet spot in terms of the data. And also going back, you mentioned that we're 7 years into this. When we started this strategy, those were 8 to 10-year-olds. So the young kids, the kids that are bearing out now in terms of this data have been receiving information and intervention and services since they were 8, 9, 10 years old, and that's why we're seeing this outcome now. You can't start with 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, right? We have to make sure that we're creating healthy, well-informed youth, even younger, and that's why we're so thrilled to see this data.
Yeah, I saw the coverage of the news conference last week, and Mayor Tom Barrett said, you know, hey, yeah, let's celebrate, but now it's time to get back to work. What's the next goal?
Well, you know, we haven't set the next goal yet in terms of a metric, but I do want to reiterate that one of the things that I think public health and social services in general can be guilty of is that we hit a metric or we make a goal and then we move on to the next thing, right? Well, okay, well, we solved teen pregnancy, so now I'm going to go talk about childhood obesity or whatever the next issue is. We can't even first, I think the mayor said we had 5 minutes that we could celebrate, mm-hmm. and it was time to start working again, right? We can't rest on this. We're going to continue to approach this as aggressively as ever. We are going to talk about whether or not that means we set a new goal. Do we just continue to watch it drop every year? I anticipate, knowing the people that I work with, that there will be a new goal articulated. But we cannot and will not become complacent. That's really the takeaway. As soon as you lose focus, as soon as you tell yourself that you've achieved something or fixed something, that's the first way to see that graph, that line on the graph go back up, and we're not going to have that.
We are talking with Nicole Ingrassano. She is the Vice President of Community Impact for United Way's Health and Human Services Programs. She leads the United Way's Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative. And we're welcoming your questions for her. What do you think about this 50% drop in the teen birth rate in Milwaukee after 7 years with this program going on? Do you think this program can work elsewhere? Can the success be sustained? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What is the key to preventing teen pregnancy? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 23 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, October 30th. We are talking about Milwaukee's Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative, which announced last week that the program has now seen a 50% drop in the teen birth rate in Milwaukee, which exceeds the program's goal. And we are talking with a guest who leads the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative in the greater Milwaukee area, which has been honored nationally as a model for other cities. We welcome your questions. We welcome your reaction. We welcome your issues. Have you talked to your kids about the topic of teen pregnancy? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jennifer from La Crosse called in to say simply, Nicole, keep up the good work. She grew up in the Milwaukee area and remembers seeing many pregnant girls when she was in high school, including, she says, a couple of her own cousins. So, and that's really important to you too. It's not only the community wide impact, but the difference this makes in the teens' lives.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, being a parent as an adult is a really tough gig. And many of us, you know, are fortunate enough to have social support, emotional support. We have insurance. We have, you know, a lot of the check boxes to check off. 15-year-olds don't have the emotional or physical capacity, quite frankly, to make great parents. Now, I want to be very clear. There are teen parents out there who defy the odds. There are teen parents every day who get up and take care of their children and do an extraordinary job, something I'm not sure I would have been able to do at 15. But we know behind the anecdotal evidence, behind the individual youth that we all know who seem to defy the odds and exhibit extraordinary resiliency, the numbers don't lie. And those numbers are that young people who become teen parents are less likely to finish high school themselves. Children born to teen parents are less likely to finish high school. Boys born to teen parents are more likely to be incarcerated, and these are significant, significant outcomes, and we have to be willing to talk about that and have a serious discussion. You know, and lastly, to that point, no 14 or 15-year-old should have their life choices severely limited by that age. We want these young people to have every opportunity to finish high school, to go to college, to pursue a career, and then to become parents when they're able to have them on purpose with a partner that loves them and can help take care of the child, and when they are, I'd say when they're ready, but then we'd never have kids, right? It's when they're as ready as they can be to move forward with that next step.
Tell us a little bit about getting parents to talk to their teens about sex. You have a sex myth campaign going on right now?
We do. Well, you know, parents are well-meaning creatures. We are. Mm-hmm. But even with the best of intentions, sometimes we don't necessarily have all the skills or the information that we need. We also know that a lot of parents weren't necessarily talked to by their parents. The myths campaign really evolved from knowing that there's a lot of misinformation out there. I mean, the campaign is very funny and it's eye-catching, and I think people will really like it. But those myths have all actually been articulated, and more than once. These are myths that have come up in community-based organization settings that we've heard from maybe our own kids. And what we know is that young people, despite what they're telling their parents, or maybe there's a lot of eye rolling or there's clearly hesitation to appear that they're interested, young people actually do want their parents to talk to them about these things. No one knows them better. No one loves them more. So can we help parents be that person for their child? Can we provide them with the opportunities to say, oh, what an interesting television show you're watching. Let's talk more about this. Or has this ever happened to you? Can we find opportunities when they're trapped with us in the car, so to speak, to talk about some tough subjects in a way that will have meaning and impact? And we think that if we give parents some tools and we give them some openings and they realize it's not this serious talk where one of you is sitting on the edge of the bed and the other one's got their head under a blanket, that we can make a lot of progress in that area. And I really do want to stress to the first question that we got earlier on, we really do believe and trust that parents should be the first and primary sex educator. And we want to make sure that we provide them with the tools and the self-efficacy to do that.
Well, for example, one of the sex myths in this campaign, you can't get pregnant if we have sex in a hot tub, one boy tells
right.
A teen girl. And I remember that one, actually. Mountain Dew lowers your sperm count. I had not heard that myth. So kids are hearing this. That the point is that kids are hearing these types of things, and you want parents to know those myths and be able to set their kids straight.
That's exactly right. And, you know, maybe even, not more importantly, but some of these myths actually came from adults who are parents.
Uh-huh.
That Mountain Dew myth has been around a long time. The Jumping Jacks myth has been around a long time. So, again, we can't expect parents to help lead our youngsters down a path of education and factual information if they don't have the information themselves. And gosh, parents are so well-meaning. But even those of us who talk about and are in this space all the time, we get some stuff wrong. And there's a lot of confusing information out there. And things have changed, quite frankly, since we were teenagers. So we want to make sure we keep parents up with what's going on now, what we're hearing, what we're seeing, and give them the tools to talk to their kids in the way that they're most comfortable.
Christy in Chippewa Falls has a good question. I hope we have time to at least start on our answer for it. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Couple of practical questions. It's a wonderful initiative. How is it funded? Is it grants? Is it state, federal? Is all of Milwaukee Public Schools benefiting, or is it targeted? And maybe contact for other interested communities who would like to look into it. Thank you.
Thanks. We only have 30 seconds before a news break. So why don't we let you think about the answer, Nicole, and then we'll pick up on this point after we check the news. We are talking about teen pregnancy prevention, and we're talking about the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative that's going on in Milwaukee with the woman who's leading it, Nicole Angrisano, Vice President of Community Impact for United Way-funded Health and Human Services Programs. We'll check news, and then we'll be back with more of your calls, perhaps, at 1-800-642-1234 after this news. We're talking about a teen pregnancy prevention program in Milwaukee that is considered a model for the nation. The Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative is also seeing great success. It was announced last week that the birth rate, the teen birth rate in Milwaukee, has dropped by 50% over the past 7 years, which is surpassing the program's ambitious goal at least 3 years ahead of schedule. We're talking about why it's important to prevent teen pregnancy, how this program in Milwaukee is doing it, and we're welcoming your questions and your views. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, October 30th. We are talking with a guest who is leading Milwaukee's teen pregnancy prevention initiative. She is Nicole Angrisano, who is Vice President of Community Impact for United Way funded Health and Human Services Program in the greater Milwaukee area. We had a caller just before our news break, Nicole, who wanted to know how is this program funded and are all or just targeted schools involved, and whether or not there's a place to go for more information if other cities want to try to replicate it.
Well, absolutely. I can't talk about this enough. So we really welcome inquiries from other communities. We're not proprietary about this information. One of the things I do say, however, is that this is an initiative designed by and for Milwaukee. So while we recognize that there certainly are strategies that are universal, every community will need to tailor the messaging, the strategies to their community, because the issues are not the same everywhere, and teens are not the same everywhere. I think sometimes we get into this sort of one-size-fits-all approach, or we just assume that all teens are thinking and feeling and behaving the same way. But community dynamics and history really matter. And so while we welcome and I love spending my time with people from other communities who want to learn more about this, there also has to be some work within those communities. The funding is pretty interesting. You know, we we've managed to do a lot with a little. The funding, and one of the reasons is that we get a lot of in-kind and very, very deep discounts from our media partners. For example, Serve Marketing, who has given us probably $2.5 million worth of work that we haven't had to pay for. I mean, that's not something that we could pay for as a United Way. So without their gifts, both on the artistic and the financial side, we wouldn't be where we're at. Secondly, the biggest funding stream is really that Healthy Girls Making Proud Choices piece that I mentioned earlier, and that's entirely funded by donor dollars to United Way. The Women's Leadership Initiative of United Way, which is made up of women who give at a certain level, have really taken this topic on as their issue. They care about women and girls. This matters to them, and so they have generated significant dollars every year that has gone directly to funding the evidence-based programming that you've heard about in community-based organizations. We also have, I briefly mentioned, the Collaborative Fund, where 9 foundations in Milwaukee have put dollars towards this effort so that we can, United Way can't do this by themselves. You know, we provide backbone support, and I sort of liken myself to a conductor of an orchestra, but I don't play the instruments. The instrument players and the singers and everybody that's out there doing this frontline work is really where the action's happening. But it takes money and coordination and communication to get that done, and that's the role we play. The Milwaukee Public Schools question I want to touch on. Human growth and development is offered at Milwaukee Public Schools throughout the district. Now, what we know is that not every school implements it, that some schools, for example, might only do middle school level classes. Some may only do it at the high school, but it is available to all Milwaukee Public Schools. We have not targeted any school in particular. We want this to be an accessible community-wide curriculum that's available. But we also make sure that when we fund programs through Healthy Girls, our Making Proud Choices programs, that if there are schools that really want to get these services but their needs haven't been met, that we can make sure that we plug in community-based organizations to those particular schools so that every youth, my dream is that every 6th, 7th, and 8th grader in Milwaukee has received Making Proud Choices, and I think we're getting close to that number.
Tell us a little bit more about the human growth and development curriculum that is taught in the Milwaukee Public Schools. This is comprehensive sex education, which means birth control and abstinence?
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think that's important because we all know this is not two sides. It's not abstinence or you talk about birth control, right? You have to talk about both of those things. Abstinence is the only 100% effective way to prevent sexually transmitted infections in pregnancy. We know that. It's reinforced in both the curriculum that United Way supports as well as the human growth and development curriculum in Milwaukee Public Schools. The full curriculum is available online at the Milwaukee Public Schools website. We want parents and community members to have access to this information. There's no secrecy here. There's no mystery. You can go on and look at any of the lessons that are there. And I think it's also important to share that these lessons, while created with the National Health Education Standards in mind, were also vetted and influenced by community members and parents. We had a very open process throughout the city of Milwaukee for people to come in and say, this doesn't work for me or you're missing this. And parents at any time can opt their children out of these lessons. I don't recommend that they do that, right? I think they're really solid lessons. They're age appropriate. I don't want anybody leaving this conversation thinking that, 5-year-olds are learning about contraception. That's not what's happening. These are age appropriate. They get more serious and more they get broader as the young person gets older. But that being said, parents have the right at any time to opt out of a lesson, to opt out of the curriculum. This is not a mandate. But we do think it's a very, very important subject for young people to be taught.
Along those lines, Michael in Rice Lake says, birth control is the key to preventing teen pregnancy. Anyone who doesn't think teens are having sex is burying their head in the sand. Do you think so?
Teens are having sex. I mean, I think we have to. Not all teens, And one of the things we want to make sure is I think teens feel a lot of pressure with that whole perception of everyone's doing it, everyone's not doing it. But what we know is he's exactly right, is that there are teenagers who are engaging in sexual behaviors. Some of them are engaging in sexual behaviors by choice. Others have been victimized. You know, one of the components that I erred by not talking about earlier is our commitment to addressing sexual violence and sexual victimization. Many babies born to teens in Milwaukee and in other communities are fathered by adult males. This is a serious situation, and we have to talk about it. And so when you're talking about young people having sexual behaviors, not all those behaviors are voluntary. There's often a power imbalance. There might be violence attached to it. But yes, besides abstinence, which we certainly support and encourage, the other key piece of keeping young people infection and pregnancy free is making sure that they have access to and that they use correctly contraception.
Yeah. Do you know, Nicole, the birth rate in Milwaukee has been reduced by 50%, which is fantastic. But do we know that this is because teen pregnancies were prevented or that teens are having more abortions?
Well, the abortion statistics have actually gone down as well. So I think it's a valid question because there is a distinction between pregnancy rates and birth rates. But what we know is that fewer teens are getting pregnant and fewer teens are having babies. And this clearly is a result of either children delaying sexual behaviors until later or using and correctly using contraception. The abortion numbers have gone down. I think that's a really important point to make. What we know is that young people are making better choices and they're staying pregnancy free.
We are talking about Milwaukee's Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative, and we're welcoming your questions about what it takes to prevent teen pregnancies and the importance of preventing teen pregnancies. And we're welcoming any questions or experiences you have had. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about a teen pregnancy prevention program in Milwaukee that announced last week that the birth rate, the teen birth rate in Milwaukee dropped by 50% over the past 7 years. And we are welcoming your questions about preventing teen pregnancy, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do you think is the key to preventing teen pregnancy? Our guest is Nicole Angrisano. She is Vice President of Community Impact for United Way Funded Health and Human Services programs in the Greater Milwaukee area. She leads the United Way's community-wide Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative in Milwaukee, which has been honored as a national model for community collaboration. And is there, Nicole, anything like this in the nation? Is you're honored as a model for the nation? Is this typical for teen pregnancy prevention programs?
Well, there is extraordinary work going on around the country in this space, and people have been at this for years. And so we have been informed by and inspired by programs all around the country. That being said, our model is certainly unique. You know, I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier about it being informed by and influenced by the community within which it lies. This is a Milwaukee initiative, and this is based on Milwaukee's history. This isn't the first time that we've tried to come together as a community to address teen pregnancy, and we wanted to honor those past experiences. We wanted to make sure that we learned from what worked and then that we moved those efforts forward. So there are people, youth, adults, who have been working in this space for decades with extraordinary outcomes. We have benefited from those folks and have been inspired by them. That being said, I'm fairly certain that we are a one of a kind model, which could be good and bad. But we have a combination of strategies, audiences, and projects that is unlike any other project in the country.
Well, looking at these statistics, the drop in the teen birth rate in Milwaukee for Hispanics, 56%, for African Americans, 55%, and 47% for whites. Is it different for the different ethnic groups in terms of, I don't know, information needed to or approach needed to prevent teen pregnancy?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, and certainly our campaign has been for all teens. We haven't targeted particular ethnic groups, but in Milwaukee, one, we have a large ethnic minority population, and two, the teen birth rates, the disparities have been significant. This is a problem or a situation that does impact girls of color at greater rates, so we need to be sensitive to that. That being said, I think there's two things. One is that there are some core solid foundational strategies that should reach across communities, evidence-based education, parental engagement, these pieces. There are also, I think, community differences and unique aspects of different faith communities, different ethnic groups that need to be taken into account and honored, and we've tried to do that. It's not as simple as translating things into Spanish. We need to make sure that our work is informed by members of the Latino community who can speak to us. I'm not Latino. I shouldn't be making assumptions about what works for Latino and Latina youth and families. So we try very hard to make sure that we reach out to others who live in and work in communities so that we can have projects that are culturally relevant and that will have greater impact on the families and children that they serve.
Mm-hmm. Are Hispanic and African American girls more likely to give birth as teens?
If you look at the numbers, the teen birth rates historically have disproportionately affected African-American and Latina girls, mm-hmm. girls of color in particular. That being said, we do not consider this to be an ethnic minority problem. There are lots of white teens who also get pregnant and or give birth. But the disparities are significant. And you can, you know, if you took out sort of the racial issue and you just look at economic disparities, certainly teen births impact children who live below poverty, teens who live in more delicate economic situations, they impact those youth more, and so we have to talk about that and approach that. But teen sexuality, sexually transmitted infections, pregnancies, these go across the spectrum. Right? Nobody's protected because of the zip code they live in or the economic status of their parents, but it does impact girls of color and low-income children more.
Yeah, I was going to say it. Certainly, those who might be listening who are thinking, well, this is just a problem in big cities or in Milwaukee, not in my town. That's not the case.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think, you know, we all, you know, hope that or, you know, naively believe that things can't happen to us or can't happen in our community. But teens are teens everywhere. And they're engaging in risky behaviors everywhere. And so the best thing we can do, whether you live in Milwaukee or you live in rural Wisconsin or you live in a different state altogether, is make sure that as a parent, you're giving your kid the skills they need, and as a community, you have opportunities for them to succeed, whether it's academically or because of or based on physical health outcomes.
You know, my mom would be so mad at me if she knew I was saying this. She passed away many years ago. She was a teen mother. She got pregnant when she was 15 years old, and it really did affect her life. Luckily, she was able to, you know, overcome a lot of obstacles, got her GED and her nursing license, and was able to overcome, I guess, the having babies so young in life. But I mean, she was in rural northern Wisconsin, so
That's right.
Yeah. In any case, she did not see though billboards of boys pregnant and things like that. So that's what you're doing right now to reach out to everybody in Milwaukee. That's one of your components is like billboards showing pregnant boys or things that really get attention. Why did you actually target, why did you show pregnant boys in those billboards?
Well, and you know, the Pregnant Boys is one of our earlier campaigns, and you know, our friends in Chicago have relaunched it, so it's getting a lot of attention again. But we did that about, gosh, it's been probably close to 5.5 years now, and that was one of the original, actually, community-wide campaigns, and it got at this point that I was talking about earlier about complacency. When you see those billboards, I mean, they make people flinch. It's an unusual picture to see a teen boy bare-chested and clearly expecting a baby. And this wasn't any kind of commentary on boys getting pregnant. This is really about complacency, and we had become complacent. We were not flinching or feeling uncomfortable when we saw 14-year-olds pushing baby carriages. We were not flinching as a community when we saw our teen birth rate among the highest in the nation. And so we really needed to knock some sense into people, quite frankly, and say, wake up. This is a serious problem, and we need to talk about it as a community, and we need to address it as a community, as a collaborative. And I think that those billboards were really a turning point for us in that, yes, not everybody loved them. Yes, they were controversial in that they were, you know, we understand it's aggressive messaging, but I would posit that it really did a great job getting the dialogue sort of re-jumped, that people were saying, oh, wait a minute, this is still a problem here. Just because I don't see it every day doesn't mean it's not happening, and here are the implications, and here's where I go to learn more, and here's what I can do about it.
Yeah, so do you have more to come with your media campaign?
Oh, we always have more to come. You know, one of the things that's maybe the joys and the pains of living in this digital internet era is that you have to keep your messaging fresh, and there's a lot of competing messaging out there. And so we actually are, you know, we really don't rest on our laurels for very long. We have a meeting. We just launched the Myths campaign about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we're already ready for our next meeting in terms of teasing out what our next tactics look like. So we have tactics coming sort of in the hopper for the next 2 years already that we're constantly reviewing. We vet them with the target audience. That's one thing I wanted to say too, is that when people who look and sound like me, you know, I'm a 42-year-old Caucasian married mother, I'm not the target audience for many of these ads. So we need to make sure that the ads resonate with the target audience, not with maybe everybody listening on the phone today. And that's something we take very seriously. These ads are created by and informed by the audience that they're trying to reach. So, yes, we have more ads to come. It is it's a critical part of this campaign.
Yeah. And in our final, I guess, our final minute here, what is it that you would like our listeners to take away from this conversation from the program that you have?
You know, I hope that the listeners feel hopeful. I hope that they realize or that they believe that when a community comes together, even a community as diverse and with such historical issues as Milwaukee has had, when you combine resources and you set aside turf and credit and you just focus on achievement, great things can happen. There's not an issue out there, whether it's childhood obesity, like I mentioned earlier, or infant mortality, where we're hoping to turn our lens next. There's not an issue out there that can't be solved, that can't be heavily, heavily, positively impacted if community members come together, combine resources, combine energies, and focus on a very specific goal.
Well, congratulations on the success of this program, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Nicole Angrisano is Vice President of Community Impact for United Way-funded Health and Human Services Programs. She leads the United Way's community-wide teen pregnancy prevention initiative. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.